Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Not a single piece of our anatomy protects us from those types of collisions. A human being will get concussed at 60 Gs. A common head-to-head contact on a football field? 100 Gs. God did not intend for us to play football.
That's Will Smith in the new movie Concussion, which will be released in theaters Christmas Day. You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, sitting in for Chris Boyd. This hour, we're talking with the author of the book Concussion, Jean Marie Laskus. Her research and interviews provided material for the new film. Jean Marie Laskus, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So in your book, I'm not sure which is more gripping, the stories of the football players who lost their perception of reality after countless blows to the head, or that of this doctor you profiled, Dr. Bennett Omalu. He's the man who discovered the disease. Tell me about him.
Okay, so Dr. Bennett Omalu, he came from Nigeria to this country in 1994 as a young, newly minted doctor who's chasing the American dream in every respect, thought this was the country, the place where you came to be the best version of yourself. He studies, he's brilliant, he gets so many degrees, I can't even name them all, ends up pursuing forensic neuropathology, is doing autopsies in a morgue in Pittsburgh for a living, when one day he gets the body of Pittsburgh Steeler Mike Webster on the slab.
Now, before he gets that body, let's go back just a little bit and unravel where he came from, because he was born, you write, in the midst of war in Nigeria. What was his life like growing up?
His life, he was born in the Nigerian Civil War, and I mean during wartime. His father actually was getting patched together from shrapnel blows all through him in the bed next to his mother when she was giving birth. And they were refugees trying to find their way through this situation. And by the time the war was over, they got back to their village and their compound was destroyed where they lived, and spent their lives putting it back together. And Bennett was really sheltered. He was one of seven children, the youngest, second to the youngest, and he wasn't allowed out after all that, I guess, war and stress. His mother wanted to protect him. So he really knew very little about the world in general.
And I love this because he wanted to become an airplane pilot. So how did he end up studying medicine?
Yeah, he really wanted to be a pilot. He wanted to fly away. That really was his childhood dream, is to fly away. But he was so bright, and his father decreed that the bright child in the family should become a doctor. So they sent him to medical school. He was 16 when he started.
And yeah, he started school very young. I remember in the book you write that he went with his older brother when he was just, I don't know, four, or before he was supposed to start, because he wanted to be with his brother so much.
Yeah, he you have to understand, he had never been out. He had been so sheltered, going to boarding schools and, you know, in cars, and he just knew nothing about the world. The first time he ever walked down the street on his bike by himself, he was like 13, and he was terrified. So, you know, he needed some assistance with real world, and his older brother was helping him.
The fact that he would go on to face this $8 billion, this massive organization, the NFL, and confront them is just incredible, that he would grow up afraid of the world in some ways.
He's the least likely character to put into the situation facing the NFL. I mean, you just couldn't pick someone more ill-equipped for dealing with sort of like corporate greed, the last thing he could understand.
And you write that throughout school and his life, he suffered from depression. So mental illness was something that he was definitely aware of, but did that drive him at all, his fascination with the brain?
Most definitely. I mean, he suffered profoundly during medical school. dropping out at several points and barely getting through it. He thought if he came to America, he'd be cured. And this is his level of, he would say, my level of sophistication was that sort of low at that point. So he was fascinated to understand what was going on in his own brain, that he couldn't cure himself. He couldn't figure out what was wrong. And as he became fascinated with the brain, part of it was, what goes on? Why do people commit suicide? What's going on in their brains?
And he was a very meticulous doctor. You describe him as the type of pathologist who cleans his instruments between autopsies, as if there's some sort of risk of infection from one patient to the next.
Yeah, that apparently drove people crazy at the morgue, because it's a county morgue. They've got, limited funds, and he would spend so much time in special instruments to do his autopsies his way. He was, extremely spiritual man anyway. And when he would confront a dead body, he really felt that he had a duty to that body and that spirit attached to it. And he would talk to the dead, unabashedly. And we'd take out these instruments that were specific. And when people would say, why are you doing that? He would say, would you want me to do your mother's autopsy with used instruments? Come on.
With the instrument I used on a killer?
Right.
So he would talk to his dead patients. And he did this when he first got, as you say, the body and the brain of the legendary Steelers center, Mike Webster. What was the type of thing he would say or he might have said to the body?
Well, first of all, it would be just like he would talk to anybody, because that's just what he did. And he didn't have any idea who Mike Webster was. He didn't understand American football. He had no reason to understand American football.
It was just another body.
Yeah, it really was. Until, everybody's sort of excited all around him. Ooh, Mike Webster. He's like, who is he? And they're like, he was the most famous center to ever play the game. And Bennett's like, what's a center and which game are we referring to? While the whole city is, Mike Webster, Hall of Famer, who had gone so crazy in the later part of his life, tragically, living out of his car, using super glue on his teeth, using a taser on himself to get to sleep. Really tragic. So Bennett's question was, okay, here's a 50-year-old man who died of a heart attack. That was the cause of death. But why did he go so crazy? What happened? And that was the question driving him.
So you sort of started to describe this downfall that Mike Webster had, and it's just tragic. He was super gluing his teeth in and the tasering himself to get to sleep. What else happened to him?
Well, he was living in his truck by the time during the latter years. He became violent. He became, just couldn't control. He was on Ritalin and any kind of drug he could get just to try and kind of clear his head. He was wandering. He was destitute.
What did the NFL doctors or the doctors who had been treating him throughout his career think of what was going on with him?
Well, I think in the very beginning, it was really, especially with the Steelers and the Rooney family, that's a really tight community. It really genuinely is. And I know people tried to help, but they couldn't keep track of him. At one point, I know the Steelers put him up for, put him in the Hilton Hotel for a long time to just give him a place to live. People were trying to help, but then he would just wander off, and no one knew what was wrong with him. No one knew.
And he wrote thousands of letters, and I'm going to have you read from one of them. He would capitalize in random places. They're very concerning letters, to say the least. So read a little bit of one of those, if you would.
Sure. So here's one that he scribbled. What do I do? I am overwhelmed. What to do? Have no way be able to help my kids, everyone, other family dependents, and keep them healthy, safe. Maybe me worthless piece of crap, but cannot let that get to me. Have to keep trying, keep work at all this, but how do I do anything now?
Really just sad. This is not how he used to speak, I imagine.
No, no, gosh, no. He was a father of, you know, he was a beloved father and husband and beloved teammate, you know, really, you know, just a normal guy. And now he was a wreck, and he did. He wrote thousands and thousands of letters to his attorney. He was living at one point in his attorney's parking lot, and he would just write him letters and wait till he got there so he'd have someone to talk to.
So when Dr. Bennett Omalu finally looked at Webster's brain, what did he find?
Well, the first thing he found was nothing, and that really confused him, because he opened the, you know, the skull and expected, you know, when you look at an Alzheimer's brain or a brain that's like a boxer's brain, for example, that has dementia pugilistica, it's shriveled or it's you know, sort of battered looking. And Mike Webster's brain looked absolutely normal. So that confused Bennett even further. He's like, well, maybe there's nothing wrong with his brain. But he wanted to, so he decided to look further. And he ended up, you know, taking the brain home to his apartment to work on it.
But people must have thought he was crazy. I mean, here he was wanting to look at the brain of this person. I mean, you know, taking his body apart.
Yeah, there was no it was unprecedented. No one, there was no obvious reason to do that. And, you know, and you have to imagine just Bennett is just this guy. He's like a scientist who just needs to get to the bottom of the situation. And so he convinced his boss to let him, you know, keep going. And it was really unprecedented. I mean, this would not happen even probably in most places today even. But this is, you know, I don't know, 2002 and in a little morgue in Pittsburgh where Bennett was supported by Cyril Wecht, who was his boss at the time.
Now, why is it that this was went to the county morgue for an autopsy? What was it that landed it there and not just straight to the funeral home?
Well, he had been diagnosed earlier in his playing years as having some kind of what did they call it back then? There was a phrase they called concussion related in his history.
Injury.
So there was a reason to suspect injury.
Hmm. And he takes the brain home and also the tests that he had to run, since he didn't see anything abnormal in when he opened up Webster's brain, he ran very costly tests.
Right. He ordered sort of this staining that you do to a brain to be able to reveal proteins or abnormalities on the slides. And so he had some hunches, and he worked with his hunches and ordered these tests. Were very expensive. He paid for them all himself. There was no one else. He wasn't using any government grants or any university backing. So this was pretty much a personal sort of mission he was on.
And he was really risking it all. And we'll talk about what he found on those slides. And really, that was just the beginning for him. We'll talk about that in a moment. But you're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. And this hour, we're talking with author Jean Marie Laskus. Her book, Concussion, tells the story of the doctor who inspired the new movie featuring Will Smith. You can join our conversation about the NFL, science, and a determined forensic pathologist by calling 800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. We'll be back with more after a short break with Jean Marie Laskus.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Spring registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, literature, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. Our guest this hour is author Jean Marie Laskus. Her book, Concussion, tells the story of the doctor who inspired the new movie. This doctor, played by Will Smith in the movie, publishes his findings about a new brain disease in football players, and the NFL goes after him.
What do they want?
Your head on a spike.
They want you to retract your findings.
They want you to say you made it all up.
I made it up.
They're accusing you of fraud.
If you retract, you'll be fine. This all goes away.
Why are they doing this?
They're terrified of you. What did you think they were going to say? Thank you?
Yes.
What the hell for?
For being told. For knowing.
I understand. You think you're being a good American. So, the city of Pittsburgh spent $233 million. To build their glorious Steelers a new stadium. All the while they were closing schools and raising taxes. These people are not out to change the world. And this is not some quaint academic discovery stuck in the back of an obscure medical journal. Bennett Omalu is going to war with a corporation that has 20 million people on a weekly basis craving their product. The same way they crave food. The NFL owns a day of the week. The same day the church used to own. Now it's theirs. They're very big.
Jean Marie Laskus, describe the disease that he's talking about here, the disease Dr. Bennett Omalu discovered.
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, is a disease in which abnormal proteins called tau proteins accumulate in your brain and accumulate and clog up the works so that you are pretty much the choking, basically. The image they use is like concrete down a kitchen sink. Pretty much the pathways are become choked.
And had this been found in anyone else? Was this something that was new?
This is a disease nearly identical to the disease in boxers, dementia pugilistica, with a few differences, but not on the it's similar also to Alzheimer's, although that's a different protein. So these are all related, but CTE is the one that Bennett finally discovered in these Mike Webster's brain.
And you talk about this in boxers, which was fascinating. I didn't realize how far back the identification of this went. There was an article in a medical journal from 1928 about this.
It's so fascinating to read the history of this of boxing. It's so similar to what's happening now with football. Because back in the 20s, you know, boxing is here. You have the most popular sport in the U.S. as well as in Britain, and these scientists are, some of them are starting to wonder how come these boxers all end up in asylums. You know, that's where they would all go, and they started looking, and eventually that disease was discovered, dementia pugilistica.
But no one had thought it was something that you'd find in football players.
No, which when you really look at the scientific, when you really study this, you start wondering why didn't we think it? And that's what would Bennett would say to you too, like, how is it no one even went looking for this before? He was the first to even autopsy an NFL player brain.
It's insane. And in the movie at least, you see Bennett watching his wife watch football. And he's just cringing every time there's a blow and an impact and a tackle. And it seems so obvious.
Right. You have to remember, he knew nothing of this game. So he started studying it. Really started studying it. But also the basic physics of the brain inside the skull. Mind you, we've known this one since the 16th century, that the brain is floating inside the skull in liquid, and if you hit your head against something, your skull, your brain goes bashing into your skull inside. We don't have a shock absorber in there. And, you know, that's what's happening over and over and over again in a head, like a lineman's head, every single play.
It's almost like an egg yolk inside of an egg that's uncooked.
Yeah, that's a great image. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So he finds this CTE, this disease that is new and names it. So to many, though, I imagine he was a foreigner still. He was this Nigerian-American doctor with an accent. Did people see him as an outsider coming in and raising questions about this very traditional American game?
They so saw it that way that they ignored him. I mean, it was so preposterous to think that this scientist could come in and speak to, because mind you, there was a whole bunch of scientists, especially scientists on the NFL payroll, who had been studying what happens to heads in football. And there was the cool crowd. There were two cool crowds. The NFL paid scientists and the unpaid scientists have been talking and battling this one out since 1994. Mm. And in walks this stranger from another country, another society, another world, who says, "Hey, look what I found."
Who can't even name the center of the Steelers, the former center.
Right. Yeah. So he was really an outsider. And in that sense, he was really easy for the NFL to even ignore.
So one of the doctors who advised, and I think still advises, I think, the NFL, Dr. Joseph Maroon, he reluctantly agrees to meet with Dr. Bennett Omalo after he's discovered and published about CTE. And there's a scene in the movie that's based off of your work. Let's listen to it.
Do you have any idea the impact of what you're doing?
Yes, I do.
Do you understand the impact of what you are doing? If just 10% of the mothers in America decide that football is too dangerous for their sons to play, that is it. It is the end of football. Kids, colleges, and eventually, it's just a matter of time, the professional game.
Jean Marie Laskus, what did the NFL know about head injuries at the time that Dr. Bennett Omalu was looking at Mike Webster's brain back in 2002?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what they knew, but they were publishing, and they had formed a committee called the Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee from their doctors on their payroll, who they were publishing in the same journal that Dr. Omalu published in. It's called Neurosurgery. Many studies, and the conclusion's always sort of the same, saying, you know what, it's okay, we got this, and we're gonna spend a lot of money on helmets to even make it even safer and safer, but basically our game is safe. So that was the science that they were coming out with.
You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. Let's go to the phones for a minute. Let's go to Edgar in Irving.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi there.
I had a question. So for the helmets, I guess they do make a difference, but do they make that much of a difference? And is there a point of diminishing returns where we'll never really be able to prevent concussions using just helmets?
Thanks for your call. And we aren't doctors, neither of us, I don't think. But what do you know, Jean Marie Laskus?
Well, that's a great, great, great and important question. Here's it isn't even that tricky once you sort of conceive of it. The helmet basically is padding outside the skull. And it protects your skull from cracking because the blow outside of your skull is softened, but your brain is still bashing inside. And the scientists will tell you that you can put padding a foot thick outside of your head. You're still going to have that sloshing around of the brain inside. So there is a point at which the helmet, you know, might even be making the situation worse because players use it as a weapon. Players bash their heads into each other because it doesn't hurt, unlike, say, rugby players. You know, it hurts, so you don't see head-to-head contact. A lot of the scientists will tell you that might have made it worse.
So what kind of doctors were on this committee? You mentioned the Committee on Mild Traumatic Brain Injury that was funded by the NFL.
Well, that was the surprising thing. The committee, the doctors that demanded that Bennett's work be retracted, as you played in that clip. That's true. He came out with his study on Mike Webster's brain, and they said you have to, telling the journal you have to retract that. It can't be true. It's wrong. He's a fraud, et cetera, et cetera. So, which they ultimately did not retract it. So Bennett started looking at who are these guys that are demanding retraction and saying that my work is no good. Who are they? Well, he looked into them, and the leader of it all was a rheumatologist, a joint guy. Bennett's point was, how does he know more about the brain than I do?
And so when he confronted them with this, were they willing to talk about it, or was it seen as hostile what he was doing?
They really wanted nothing to do with him. It wasn't until someone believed him, Dr. Julian Bales. He's played by Alec Baldwin in the movie. He reached out to Bennett. Julian Bales had been a Steeler team doctor prior to his breaking away from them. And so he knew all these folks, and he had been there on the sidelines, and he knew the brain. And he also knew Mike Webster, too. He was had been friendly with him. So he knew, the tragedy personally. When he heard about Bennett's work, he called him and he said, you know what, I believe in you. And that was when I think that Bennett finally got someone to finally listen to him. And Dr. Bales then would take it to the NFL on his behalf.
Now, there was still, even after Dr. Bales began to try and help Bennett at least make those sort of initial connections with the NFL to introduce him, to get him meetings, there was still blatant denial going on. And eventually, the new NFL commissioner, Goodell, got rid of this former chair of the Brain Injury Committee and replaced him with a neurologist named Ira Kasson. And Kasson, you write, denied the link between concussions and brain damage or dementia so often that he earned the nickname, and we'll hear this in the clip, Dr. No.
Is there any evidence, as far as you're concerned, that links multiple head injuries among pro football players with depression?
No.
With dementia?
No.
With early onset of Alzheimer's?
No.
Is there any evidence as of today that links multiple head injuries with any long-term problem like that?
In NFL players?
Yeah.
No.
So you can just hear the denial there. Jean Marie Laskus, when did that line change? When was there a maybe?
Oh, there's barely a maybe now, I would say. It's so interesting when you play that clip. That's actually actual. This is not a documentary, this movie. It's a feature film, but they use a lot of the actual footage from some of these incidents, and that actually was an HBO interview.
A real interview, yes.
Yeah, real interview, that they kind of splice into the movie. No, that's just continued. But listen, it sort of continues today. I mean, there's not much in the way of embracing any of this. It's just reluctantly because the groundswell has been so, you have now a lot of players, not a lot, but a succession of players committing suicide dramatically, like David Dorson, who tragically shoots himself in the chest, leaving a note beside him saying, please look at my brain, there's something wrong with me. A couple of those, and you have to start saying, wait a second, what's happening?
There's a great photo in the book of Dr. Bennett Omalo. He's sitting on his balcony in a suit and medical gloves, examining a tissue sample. And you write, he'd often take his work home with him, literally. How many football players who died did he get to do tests on?
Well, here's the thing. It's sort of so strange, and it's seemingly coincidental. This was all happening in Pittsburgh. But, he does Mike Webster and then publishes that paper. And just as the NFL is coming back asking for a retraction, he has already a second brain in his possession. He's just diagnosed with it, that of Terry Long, and that he was also a Steeler. Then Andre Waters, who was a Philadelphia Eagle, who had committed suicide. Then Justin Strelzik, who was another Pittsburgh Steeler, who had also, he had crashed his car into an oil tanker. He had, essentially committed suicide. So this kept going on and on and on. I don't know what the tally is at this moment.
But he saw in their brains this same protein, this tau.
Correct, yes. He kept finding it.
So how many of these cases did it take to gain some momentum?
Well, early on, with Dr. Bale's help early on, he, the NFL decided to have a concussion summit in Chicago, and that was kind of a big moment. This is when Roger Goodell was early on just starting, that they were going to sort of take this on. They were all going to come and talk about it, the team owners, everybody. They were going to, you know, look at some of this new science. But, you know, what ended up happening is Omalu was shut out. He wasn't invited. He wasn't allowed in the room.
To a summit which, and his work had sort of inspired this whole thing.
Yes. And so they listened to Dr. Bales give the science instead of Bennett to give it. Bennett was grateful that at least the message got through, but it's sort of crazy.
And that was what year when they had the first summit?
I believe that would have been 2007 or 8.
And quickly, tell me now, are there summits still going on? I mean, how openly is this discussed in the NFL?
Well, they disbanded that committee. They started a new one that is hooked up with NIH. They gave NIH a ton of money. So, you know, theoretically they're studying it. Theoretically they are.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in this week for Chris Boyd. We're talking with Jean Marie Laskus about her book, Concussion. It's the true story of the doctor who discovered a new disease in the brains of football players and had the courage to confront the NFL. He didn't get the response he expected. You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. You can also send me a tweet. I'm @LSilverwoman, and we'll be back with more from Jean Marie Laskus after a short break.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Spring registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, literature, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think. I'm Lauren Silverman in this week for Chris Boyd. We're talking with writer Jean Marie Laskus. Her book, Concussion, tells the story of the doctor who inspired the new movie featuring Will Smith. Jean Marie Laskus, how common is the brain disease that Dr. Bennett Omalu diagnosed in NFL players?
Well, that's what we want to know and we don't know. And that's where the science is now so critical, because they don't know what we're dealing with. And, you know, and we I don't know why we, as a sort of culture or nation, are depending on the NFL to do this research. It's sort of like the tobacco industry telling us how common cancer is and lung cancer is. You know, we need to not rely on the $10 billion industry that has such a stake in this. There are independent scientists now, and I think that, if anything, the research that they're doing is what we need to support and look at. This is not a war on football. This is we're trying to save the game. We're trying to save it so these guys are not killing themselves. Find out how prevalent it is. Find out how we can find a cure for it.
I saw research I read that with the Department of Veterans Affairs and Boston University identified this disease, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, in 96% of NFL players, which they sampled. So what does that mean?
Well, and those are the ones that they sampled that they were expecting to find
it in. Okay.
Correct. But the NFL actuarials, you know, there was a big old lawsuit that happened. They their own actuarials data showed that they were expecting it in 1/3 of NFL players. One third would have it.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? Did Dr. Omalu stay in Pittsburgh and continue doing research there?
No, he was pretty much ousted entirely on all kinds of fronts. He ended up finally leaving the Allegheny County Coroner's Office and going to become a pathologist in Lodi, California, sort of working independently and away from the fray, but still working on his brains, actually in his garage there.
Instead of on his balcony, he moved to the garage.
Correct.
And now, who carried on his research?
Lots of people, thankfully. And Bennett is still involved in the research, you know, in a large way. He's now there's a new foundation called the Bennett Omalu Foundation, which is hooked up with the University of Pittsburgh, their Brain Institute. A lot of research is happening there. They're starting a CTE center there. Also, Boston University has done a tremendous amount of work in this area, especially with NFL players. And as you mentioned, the veterans, that's a key area. They're finding this more and more places.
How has your research or research in general and reporting on the effect of football, this is a question from on Twitter, affected viewership or participation?
Of the game?
Of the game, yeah.
I don't know that it's affected much at all. I really, not that I'm finding, or not that any statistics are showing, because we love football. I don't know what's going to affect that. It's just something to wonder about, because, you know, now that we know, you know, when we actually do know what we're watching, we're all sort of, as fans, complicit, you know. So that starts to get kind of serious to think through. We are supporting what it might do to these players. So.
But it hasn't just been scientists who've, like Dr. Bennett Omalu, who've called into question some of the practices and techniques in football. Some fans have, and definitely you write about Congress even taking interest a few years ago.
Yes, in 2009, there were hearings where they brought in Roger Goodell and actually some of the members of the mild traumatic brain, the original committee, to say, okay, what is going on? What is going on here? And, you know, the response from the NFL is kind of been the same since about 1997. We are looking into it. More work, more science needs to be done. We are doing everything for our players. But that, right after those congressional hearings, was when the committee disbanded.
You can join our conversation on Think by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. You can also send me a tweet. I'm @LSilverwoman. So what impact do you think Jean Marie Laskus, Dr. Bennett Omalu's work had on players or parents thinking about whether their kids should be on the field?
Yeah, and when you get into the parents thing, that is something where we're starting to see a big difference. The Pop Warner, you know, the Pee Wee Football League, the numbers are dramatically down. There starts to be a worry, like, wait a second, should I let my kid play? That's a conversation that probably needs to happen right now, you know, until we know how we can prevent this disease. I think that is an important question for parents. And Bennett has come out pretty strongly. He put an op-ed in the New York Times where he said, you know, parents should not, we should not allow kids to play until they make up their own minds as an adult at 18. That's a really strong position that others will say has gone too far, but I think it's an important one to state and claim and have others push against, like, what should we do?
Well, I mean, I can imagine, of course, if you don't start playing football until you're 18, you don't have much of a chance to do it in college or professionally.
Correct. So that is, in effect, sort of like saying, well, that's redoing American culture almost entirely. You know, what do we do with Friday Night Lights in high schools across the land if we don't have football? So, you know, it's an American culture. This is like right now a whole nationwide conversation that I think that this book and this movie need to inspire.
What do you, if you know, does Dr. Bennett O'Malu think of some of the changes that have happened at local or state levels with new rules about the amount of time kids can practice actual contact in football or tackling or so on? What does he think about those changes?
He takes such a strong stance that he thinks it's all just window dressing. That's his stance. I will tell you that other scientists, I mean, here's an interesting case where Dr. Julian Bales, who I mentioned, who helped Bennett way back when, and they're still colleagues, he's the medical director of Pop Warner. And, you know, that presents a bit of a conflict. But what Pop Warner has done with the players who still are in that league is they've reduced contact in practice. Because if you think about it, you know, that's where most of the contact happens, the head to head contact especially. So they reduce the practice time, the full pad practice time, to reduce the exposure. So that was at least, you know, a motion towards protection.
And one of the difficult things about this is that you can't always tell when someone has a concussion. I mean, this is not it's not obvious.
Well, it's even more tricky than that, because it's not just concussions. In fact, the concussed kid is probably the one who's going to be better served, because when you can see that they're really out, you're going to then say, "Ooh, we got to arrest this kid. We got to do what we can to you know, help him heal his brain." But here's what the tricky thing is in CTE: it's the subconcussive hits, the ones you don't see. The linemen who hit play after play after play, they are not knocked out. That's just the routine play. That's what they believe is those subconcussive hits, repetitive head trauma, that they believe is really at the root of this.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Larry in Dallas.
Great subject. My question is, there's no way that anybody can not realize that this is a cumulative injury for kids and all, but nothing's going to change until some kid sues his parents or a coach. But let me ask you this. Have any of these doctors who helped cover this up for the NFL received any professional censure? Thanks.
Whoops, good question.
That's a fabulous question, and the answer is no. In fact, we still see some of them on the NFL payroll. They're still there. Most of them, many of them. I don't want to name them all by name, but they're still there. You know, and the 5,000 former NFL players and their families sued the NFL, you know, and that finally we had the results of that sort of class action suit, the settlement. And part of the terms of the settlement, which was a terrible settlement, part of the terms were that the NFL would never have to reveal what it knew and when it knew it. So this is all just, we're just moving, skipping along as if nothing bad's happening here.
Dr. Bennett O'Malu was is still a deeply religious man. What role do you think religion played in his work?
Well, you know, as I talked about how he would talk to the dead bodies.
Yes.
You know, it was a spiritual thing for him. He talked to God. He talks to the dead bodies. He just, you know, he has a kind of a, it's unusual for scientists to be so sort of like, you know, publicly God-loving and God-fearing. Or to just be so open about it. But that's kind of the way he speaks, you know, that he's doing the work for the dead. He's speaking for the dead. They can't speak anymore, so he's doing it. But he's fully his sense is that, you know, that we're all still, the spirit lives on. So it is a very much a spiritual cause for him.
Now, I find it interesting, though, because he seems to believe that that everything happens for a reason. And I hear that same sentiment when I've done reporting in Texas at high school football games, when I've talked to parents and players about concussions, who say they're not frightened of football because if something bad is going to happen, like a major concussion or another injury, it isn't up to them, that everything happens for a reason. What would his response be to that?
Oh, well, his response is, you know, God did not intend for us to play football. He really means that.
Wow.
You know, that just, you know, it would probably, I mean, I've never asked him this explicitly, yeah. But now that I'm thinking about it, what would he say about playing football? Is that like a sin? I don't know.
Now, what happens with other sports? There are concussions, and I know in women's soccer and in hockey, and as you talk about in boxing. How do you decide where to draw the line?
Well, I think that's why we need to sort of keep having this conversation and keep supporting the science, because what's happening? At what age do you start accumulating this stuff? And what level of impact? I mean, there's so many questions that we just don't know. And when they are finding it, and CT has been diagnosed in, you know, as young as I believe, a 21-year-old, I think perhaps an 18-year-old, they found it in as well. So it's, you know, it's accumulating.
Is the disease, when you say they found it in someone so young, is it something you can diagnose without actually doing an autopsy for?
No, only that's the thing. You can only diagnose it on autopsy at this point. That's part of the science moving forward as well. If they could diagnose it in a living person, you know, then you could say, look, you have early signs of this. You better not do any contact sports, for example. I mean, that I could foresee a day when we get to a situation like that. But right now, we're just all in the dark.
So right now, the research that is going on, it's a collaboration between NFL funded and government funded.
Well, there's pockets of research going on. So the NFL has put a lot of their focus on and money into the NIH, and so there's research happening there. There's research happening university across the land. Certainly at Boston University and University of Pittsburgh, as I mentioned, but others as well. So this has become a field, you know, especially. Doctors scientists who specialize in Alzheimer's, for example, this would be a sort of a place where they would be able to easily switch into this field as well.
Who do you think should be funding this research?
Oh, most definitely independent scientists. I just from watching what has happened with, I just make that parallel with the tobacco industry. Certainly not the NFL. You can't depend on the $10 billion industry to police itself around these issues, especially now that we've given them plenty of chance to do it responsibly, I'd say. It's not happened.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. Our guest this hour is Jean Marie Laskus. She's author of the original GQ article, Game Brain, which served as the basis of the major motion picture Concussion that's out this week, Christmas Day, featuring Will Smith. Jean Marie Laskus, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Knavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer, with help on the phones today from Kristen Taylor. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.